woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I
do. There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him. I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Greg Pappas on the board, and in studio, S&P Futures up 10, Nasdaq Futures up 42. Our normal Thursday guest, Lou, is a... battling some laryngitis, so we might come on twice next week to make up, because we need our Lou fix, especially with all these wars going on and everything. But we should have Mr. Flanagan. We should have a guest who's been here for a few other times, Greg Rupczynski. I should be here. We'll talk about a lot of stuff going on in Chicago. Greg knows a lot about that, because it's a kind of a microcosm, I think, of what's going on around the rest of the country. We have... individual stocks, not going so much today. We've got the dollar. I mean, there's a lot of green here, but getting a little bit of a bounce back from something like NVIDIA, which was down 25 or 30 yesterday. They're up 9 today. Still almost $100 off its high. Some of those stocks have been getting whacked a little bit. Tesla's been getting whacked a lot. Microsoft, Meta, they're all down a little, but nothing crazy. We're down, you know, 3, 3.5, 4% from the highs, so it's not like it's a massive... A massive thing. John, do we have you for a bit?
You do, Tom. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Well, I haven't seen you in ages. Wait a minute.
Yeah, it seems like hours, Tom.
Hey, you know what? I wonder, Greg would be interested in this. I want to talk a little bit about some of these commodities when Greg gets himself set up over there. Because we've seen, you know, everybody's fighting back and forth about these inflation numbers. You actually have seen the commodity prices slipping, like corn prices and things like that are down from their highs, and we've got sort of that stuff going, and yet the big inflation numbers and the services and everything else are kind of percolating through to where Powell is even saying he didn't say we're losing the fight. He says we haven't made any progress, which I guess is the same thing. But you can't say the first thing if you're a Powell, right? You got to say the second thing.
No.
And I was looking at money supply numbers, and it really doesn't surprise me that they haven't made any progress, because if you look at M2. Granted, we used to get these numbers every week. We don't anymore. M2 topped out in April March of 2022. All right, $21,711,000, and dropped down to kind of a low here in April of 2023 at $20,732,000. So roughly $1 trillion down. And now since April of 23, we're up a little bit. You know, flat to up slightly. We're up $20 billion. So we, you know, it depends on how you define a fight, right? If you really want to attack a price level or attack an issue, I mean, you have to go back. I mean, we don't want to go back, because we wouldn't want to have been there, John. But after the Civil War, when the country had put out the greenbacks, which weren't backed by anything, right? Hence the name greenback. And they didn't do that many of them. They increased the money supply by maybe 10% a year. Which is a lot, but not compared to what they did during COVID. And, you know, and they wanted to go back on the gold standard. But once you start printing, paper money, you can't stay on the gold standard. So they went off the gold standard. They wanted to go back on it. So they withdrew greenbacks out of the economy. I don't exactly know how they did that, but they did. They drained them out and actually lowered the money supply. So then you actually fought not just inflation, but you fought the price level. The price level actually went down a little bit. But these guys have shown no interest in fighting the price level. And I think they have been very remiss, and I really wish that I could talk to one of the Fed guys really in the know, not that the guys we know aren't in the know, but on this subject. I just wonder how much, and Hal alludes to this all the time, that they put so much money in the system, it's even still percolating out. You can't even really, just because the money supply stayed steady or up a little bit for the last essentially year, doesn't mean money's not entering the system that was already like put in it. So I'd really like to know if it really has been steady, if you know what I mean. But clearly there's no effort to drain it back down. I mean, to get an idea from February 2020, right before COVID, we're talking about $15,432,000,000,432. So between then and March 22nd, we're talking about $6.5 trillion. So that's in a 2-year period, roughly a 25-month period. We're up, 40%?
It's staggering.
It's staggering.
Trying to get your head around.
Hey, you came in a little bit later last night, but what did you make of the state of the world from the table? John and I met some people. Judge Tooman was a friend of mine. All these guys were contemporaries of Judge Tooman, and he's been dead roughly 9 months, I'm saying. So his 86th birthday was this weekend, so guys got together for a little bit of a memorial. And it's always an interesting group. There's some judges, some practicing attorneys, some retired attorneys. I don't know if you caught a lot of the conversation about what's going on in a lot of the courtrooms, Janet. I didn't realize how many people now, they were talking about that they show up in court, there's not even a respect. When I say respect, not like they're coming in with guns or anything, but there's no, the increase of people that are trying to be their own attorney, the increase of people who totally just tell the judge right out of the gate that I don't recognize your authority in whatever state you're, I don't recognize the state you represent or the federal government. And one judge, one guy last night was saying, well, I'm not a federal judge, I'm a state or a county judge, says to the guy. I mean, it ended up, Who are these guys? The Moors. I thought the Moors were Muslims from Africa that invaded into Spain. I mean, and we're in Shakespeare's thing. Those are people now that don't think the U.S. is the sovereign nation. Where did that come about?
Yeah, I don't know that label, but there is a whole, political sect that does not buy, government authority as it's exercised in taxation or the courts. I hate to always come back to COVID, Tom, but I really think, once they instituted remote legal proceedings, there's a tremendous loss in the aura surrounding the legal system. The idea of, getting somewhat dressed up, and lawyers get dressed up for court or are supposed to, and, you show up and it's there's a lot riding on your being there and behaving yourself, and not behaving yourself doesn't help your cause. But there's something that's become so offhand about the whole thing that people seem to be willing to push the envelope any way they can, either to get attention or to start a ruckus and just get everything lost in the static. The number of difficult clients, I wouldn't want to be a practicing attorney today with the kind of cases that are coming up and the kind of people that you'd have to represent, because I think it's really hard to get straight stories from them. They are some of them deranged or badly in need of help, medication or something, and a lawyer isn't the one necessarily that's going to make the best case for behaving themselves. If anything, it's just going to ramp up the tension. So I see a whole loss of this kind of dignity of the court system, in large part because people got used to it not being that important. You just sat around at home, your attorney was somewhere else, you were somewhere else, the judge was somewhere else, not necessarily in their own chambers either. So what did we really do that we are going to have trouble getting back? I think it's just going to be a long slog to make people respect the system who didn't have a lot of respect for it to begin with.
Well, the guy was saying it's a lot of the public attorneys now, one of the guy who's a practicing attorney. Funny stories, but he said, they don't, what do I need you for? I don't even need this court. it takes a while just to, for an attorney to explain the person why you even need an attorney and why you're in court and what's liable to happen to you. I mean, what you're accused of. The judge said it was almost the it's like Timothy and McVeigh's group, you know, is now all over the place and not just in Idaho or someplace. Or some crazy spot in Arizona. He says that, that whole group now, that those guys didn't believe that the U.S. is a legitimate government, right?
You have people in the White House saying the Supreme Court doesn't really have any say in this either. So it's not just fringe elements that are buying into this.
I don't think anybody who maybe has a brain cell working doesn't realize that the Constitution is somewhat of an amazing document, especially when you look at how the rest of the world behaves, right? But it's, you know, but nothing's perfect, John. And I was kind of surprised that if the Supreme Court essentially makes a ruling, I mean, most courts, I mean, I guess they don't really, when you think about it, they don't really do anything either. I mean, it's not like a judge runs out and arrests somebody or puts them in jail, but the Supreme Court can come out and say something, and it can be like totally ignored, and they don't have any redress to say like a month later, "Hey, idiots, this is what we meant. We mean it." I mean, or even that, let alone, you know, did they ever in the history of the country send a memo to the Justice Department and say, "Hey, did you forget about our ruling? What the hell's the matter with you?"
I'd like to see some of those. I don't think they exist. And that's one of the problems, Tom. You know, I mean, in a circuit court in Cook County, you got a sheriff. You know, there can be enforcement language in an order, and, you know, the court will, ask to review this, and parties have to come back in and, you know, produce more evidence or an accounting or something, or prove that money was handed over, that action was taken as required by the order. And the Supreme Court doesn't get that kind of enforcement arm. And depending on where the Justice Department is in all of this, and as we know, they're often at odds with the Supreme Court, even trashing its reputation too. So, you know, they're not in a hurry to give enforcement to things that they don't buy, and of course they'd be in a big hurry if they agreed with it politically. But this is the danger of, you know, a system that doesn't really have enforcement of its own. I don't know what that would look like. I don't know if people would like it very much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it would look either. But we're
reaching a point where it's, you know, there's a kind of cachet in saying, you know, I defy the Supreme Court because the Supreme Court knocked down, you know, bail out of the student loans. That didn't stop the president from continuing to, you know, throw this, you know, language around as if he's forgiving anything. And defying the courts to do anything about it. Of course, they won't do anything about it until somebody brings, you know, an action about it. They can't just make, you know, statements about it or make laws or adjudicate things without being asked to. So,
well, what's the in that particular one? And this is not. I don't even know where the hell it started, but this is. It seems like now whoever, let's put it this way, as bad as Biden has been regarding trying to. Executive orders and all those kinds of stuff. It didn't start with him. I mean, I don't exactly know where it started, John. But I think some of it. And I don't know where the blame landed. But when Obama got in office, I remember who's the guy who just resigned, McConnell. What is your role for the next 4 years? And said to make sure this guy doesn't get elected again or something like that. I mean, it's not really your role as a congressman. I mean. Matter of fact, that's not your role at all, for God's sake.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Were there any numbers tossed around in terms of, like, a dollar amount for cancellation? Or?
You mean cancellation of what?
Aren't we talking student loans?
That's kind of where we're going. Why can't we?
$5,000 is a lot different than, like, $50,000.
Yeah, but the Congress... created the law, or originally, Janet, did the Congress vote that you can't go bankrupt with student loan, or was that an administrative rule?
I think it's built into the bankruptcy code, so it would have to be legislated.
Wasn't the story, I think, well, it's going back a ways. Wasn't the story the two, I think they might have been Jewish, but I'm not sure. The two doctors that ran through, they got their loans for college and medical school and ran up two big bills and immediately declared bankruptcy. And then the Washington was aghast that this could happen to everybody, and they immediately, you know, did something, either a rule or an executive order or actually a passed law, and said it's not because of those two guys. Essentially, they panicked and said, "Oh no!"
It's kind of funny how they didn't figure that one out until somebody did it. Really, you'd think that wasn't a
well. I mean, most people don't. Most people, even if you owe some dough, if you declare bankruptcy, you're opening yourself up to. And these guys basically had no assets yet. You know,
well,
so
right,
it's really an abuse of the system.
It's an abuse of the system, but you got to figure that if you're a lawmaker, that you should build in the worst case.
Well, but every other loan is dismissible in bankruptcy. I mean, I guess, well, I could say you never know exactly how bad somebody's going to abuse something until
you
see them do it.
You could have said that from day one. I mean, I don't know.
Okay, but why would you? I guess my point is...
Why would you? It's because that's your job. Well, those guys...
Okay, but now you have people that are handicapped, that are 80 years old and still have a student loan and they can't get it out of bankruptcy, which is nuts.
Well, I'm talking about there should have been some kind of built-in contingency plan for something like that.
I don't know what it would have been. Do you, Jen?
No, and of course,
maybe like 6 or 8 years.
We weren't dealing with the amounts of indebtedness then that we are now.
I can come up with 5 right now, just off the top of my head, that should have been.
Well, yeah, now that you've seen the abuse for 40 years, you might come up with a stab, but it doesn't mean you would anticipate it before.
I could have told you in 2 seconds that people were going to, that's, it's,
well, looking
it's the
back
same
on,
way
yeah.
you can't, the same way that banks need collateral for loans. I mean, this is just 101. So that's on the lawmakers.
Okay, well, I'm just.
If you're in school for 6 years or 8 years, you know, you should at least pay 6 years.
Well, sometimes I think you have to see how people abuse stuff before you...
No.
People are way cleverer than you think, Greg. I mean, when the trading floor started...
That's not being clever, though. That's just
okay, but they put a set of rules together at the CBOE for trade, right? Same way with the Chicago Board of Trade.
Right.
They always left it open that, by the way, anything that's against, what is it, the just and equitable principles of trade, or if somebody thought of something we haven't thought about, by the way, that's illegal, too.
Right. You can't do that in federal law, but you can at least know that some people are going to try to game the system.
We got to go to break in a minute here, but take a look at the tax law. How many
the
people
tax law is built so that certain people. That's an example of what you're talking about.
I don't know that it was or is, but as people have managed to wiggle their way around it, and something does for a year or 6 months. All of a sudden, the term comes out, well, it's not illegal, it must be
illegal. No, they're wiggling their way around it as they do the lobbying to get it in place in the first place.
Greg and I sometimes disagree a lot, John. You can understand why. we come back from break, let's talk about this a little bit. But I also want to talk a little about some of the commodities. But I didn't realize that this was a kind of a growing thing. Those guys last night said all kinds of people, they show up without attorneys, without anything. John, how is the system going to even put up with that? You missed the part about the guy. He tried to throw the guy in jail from traffic court because the guy said he had no right to be there, no right to be the judge, and he was giving him mother this, mother that. And so they took the guy in custody. But evidently, they don't have people in traffic court to take anybody into custody. The two bailiffs are like, we never did this before. Fortunately, the guy's daughter showed up and said, where's my dad? Well, he's being incarcerated. And she goes, he says, tell you what, go talk to your dad. Tell him to come back in here. Give us the right words, and then you can take him home, and you deal with him. So the guy comes back all grudgingly, sorry, Judge, blah, blah, blah. And so they let the guy go. He goes, we don't even have a squad guy here to take the guy over to jail. I mean, nobody gets arrested in traffic court.
I think this is what you get when you get... Have people watching Judge Judy and People's Court and Judge Mathis. It's your chance to emote and make a stink and, you know, get some hits on your Facebook page.
Oh, God. SP Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 52. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jock.
Stocks, jocks,
Carson and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Greg Pappas in the studio and on the board. We also have a trainee today. Young Ricardo looks like a good guy. Hopefully he'll be helping us out. S&P futures up 14, NASDAQ futures up 61. For those, what a rough week for stocks and jacks. Poor Andrew, who's, how old do you think Andrew is? 24? Greg, his older brother, 28, died. Heart attack. I mean, that sucks. They don't really know what happened other than he's not here anymore. But anyway, that's not a piece of good news. Dow futures up 87. Individual stocks, I've got NVIDIA up 14, which is roughly a little more than half what they're down yesterday. In the Dow, there's like nothing moving. Everything's a little bit green. The only one that's moved over a dollar is Microsoft up $1.07. The rest of the stuff is just slightly to the positive. We've been to the positive in the morning, you know, a few times in the last couple of weeks, even though we end up the day down. Maybe today we'll actually end the day up. Let's see. Over in Europe, the DAX up 97 cents. Let's call that one flat. FTSE up 8, 0.1%. And a CAC round up 26, that's a real move, that's 0.3%. So Europe is steady, I think, waiting to see what happens over here. Over in Asia, Nikkei, a little bit of a bounce, up 117.3%, 38,079. Hang Seng up 134.8%, 16,382. Hang Seng up 2, call that flat, but over 3,000 reasonably comfortably, 3,074. Yesterday, Dow was only down 45, but the S&P was down 29. That's, you know, it's 0.6%. NASDAQ down again over a percent, 181. Whack, whack there, down to 15,683. We've got bonds today unchanged at 4.58. But, you know, below that 4.62 number, which has been, well, it was the high. We'll see if that high stays there or not. The Bund unchanged, 2.46. Japan down 2 basis points, but 0.87. Oil down 77 cents, 81.92. As it appears, the U.S. reimposed Venezuela oil sanctions, which, I don't know, the country's down there so messed up, I don't know what oil sanctions hurts or helps. Brent down 81 cents, 86.48. Natural gas up 4 cents, but still at 175. RBOB down 3 cents, 269. We've got gold up $6, 23.94. Was over 2,400 for a little bit, and then got slapped back down. Silver up 9 cents, 28.49. Copper up 8 cents, 4.42. Copper's been just... you know, it's been beneath the news, but it kind of goes up every day. It's been up from like 395 to 442. So, if you're long copper, you're happy. We have not been long copper. We're in our normal position, but wish we would have. U.S. dollar against the euro is 106.7 against the pound 124.7. So the dollar has been stronger the last couple of weeks. And crypto, last but not least, up 1,700, but 62,828. We're actually going to try and split the price of Bitcoin this week. That's going to be interesting. Greg, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, everyone. It is 6:35 here, Central Time. Chicago, 48 degrees right now. Some sun turning cloudy with a couple of showers. Later this afternoon, a high of 55 today. Phoenix, 65 right now. It's partly sunny and very warm today with a high of 94. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose is 29 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook is 49 minutes. Inbound Ike from Wolf, 28 minutes. The Rhine from 95th is 16 minutes. And on the Stevenson, 294 to the Rhine is 26 minutes. Sports. Bulls beat the Hawks. That was at the United Center, 131-116.
White Sox over like 11-15.
White Sox lost to the Royals. That was 4-2. And the Cubs beat the Diamondbacks in Arizona, and that was 5-3.
So I got you. Sox had a doubleheader. They won the second game, I think. They played the game day before. It was a real doubleheader. They didn't kick the people out after the first game. You got to watch two games. Of course, there was nobody there. There was like nobody there. I watched from like 6-7 before the Bulls, some of the other stuff came out. But I think they won the second game. Again, it probably is not listed because nobody was there at the end, type of thing. Jan, in terms of the loss stuff, everything is, you know, as our younger friend Greg here would say, I mean, everything is easy, right? I mean, nothing's easy to do it properly because people are pretty clever. Let's say Greg's coming in and grabbing his spot. Well, let's say, for instance, let's take something like really simple, like Stocks and Jocks. Simple C Corp, okay, we don't make any dough. But all of a sudden, one day, if somebody were to say, boy, I really like this show, I'm going to sponsor you idiots for you fine gentlemen, for $1 million. And I go, well, okay. Here's the check, Chief. Now, we got this $1 million, Jan. Now, I don't necessarily want to pay tax on that if I don't have to, right? I mean, at 21%, come on, we're just going to pay it, right? If I had to write out a $200,000 check to the government and taxes some Stocks and Jocks, I'd be the happiest man on earth to write that check. We'd go run right downstairs to the bar and have shots, right, Greg? I mean, that would be the happiest day of Stocks and Jocks.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds real good. But suppose we're one of these guys, I'm not paying these guys anything. Now, if you two guys, Greg, put the code together, he would say, here's how you define your revenue. Somebody wrote us $1 million check. Here's what your expenses are. We pay the group that does the feed. We pay these people. We pay the guys for the Zoom room. You know, blah, blah, blah. Who knows? Maybe we could even pay the contributors and pay the people on the board. We do all that stuff. So at the end of the day, we pay $500,000. You know, maybe we even pay the chief something. We pay the parking, you know, that kind of crap for people. This is all defined, and everybody could kind of list this. So now we've got $500,000 in profit. All right, so we're supposed to pay the government, what is it, 21% of, I don't know the rates that much, I'm not a tax guy, but it's at least 21% of the, and we write the check. And I say, I don't like these guys, screw this. Or I'm some big bank or some big swinging bleep somewhere. I'm going to say, we have, it's Stocks and Jocks, if people don't know, Stocks and Jocks is a registered trademark, okay? And it's ours. And it has value, okay? If somebody wanted it, they'd have to buy it from me. But I don't know if anybody wants it. And by the way, it's not for sale. So I could sit there and say, we're going to take, you know what, Jan, we're going to get rid of Greg. We're going to send Greg down.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we're going to send Greg down to say,
No.
We're going to send Greg down to Bermuda or actually probably rather go to Ireland. Maybe, could we send you to Greece? I'm not so sure. So we're going to send him to Greece. All right, so I don't know what the tax laws are in Greece. I don't think anybody pays much over there. So he's going to go to a place where the taxes are 5%. So we're going to say, we're going to pay Greg, you know, $1,000 a week. But we're going to charge, he's going to send in a schedule for all the people that come on the show from a little sub over there that we have. And then the sub is going to charge us $5,000 for the schedule. And oh, by the way, we're going to transfer the trademark to the little group where Greg is now running, wherever he's at, in Ireland or Caymans or someplace. And we're gonna pay a rent for our own trademark, like companies do for drug patents overseas. So now all of a sudden, $400,000 is now going to this place, and not here. So we're making $100,000 here, and we're making $400,000 there, and paying 5%. And we all of a sudden we got this bank account that grows by the minute. None of that's illegal if you just put a regular. Oh, it's immoral. It's not right. But none of that is illegal because, wait a minute, what are your expenses? These are my expenses. Yeah, but you're paying yourself, you idiot. You didn't say I couldn't. Where does it say here that I couldn't? Where does it say that I can't I can't sell my trademark to another company for a dollar and then rent it back for $1,000 a month or $10,000 a month. Yeah, but wait a minute. The U.S. government gave you the trademark, or you applied for it, and you. So what? How do you take a drug patent? This is what Forest Labs did. How do you take a drug patent, put it in the Bermuda or Bahamas, where the hell they went, and paid the rent for their own drug patent?
Location arbitrage.
Yeah. So I mean, my point is, unless you see what people do to get around stuff, it's really hard to anticipate all that. You know what? When I talk about a sports, the late Arnold Palmer, my favorite golfer. When Arnie would design a golf course, other than the obvious ones, he'd never cut any traps. Then he'd go play the course with a bunch of people.
He'd put the traps where they hit the ball.
And he'd find out where guys were cutting corners in the courts, and that's where he put the traps.
Yeah. I mean, if you're cutting similar to how people or how governments do speed limits, you find out how fast people normally go,
right,
and then you put in the speed limit 10 miles below per below that.
Take me a lot. Yeah.
Pretty well. Yeah. I mean, so there's a lot of you know, shall we say, evolution to laws and things. I mean, right now, because I mean, Dr. J and I used to have these arguments all the time.
Can I borrow from PTI about, you know, I don't know,
five and a half mil
to start my.
Well, if you got a sponsor, I'll tell you what. If you got a sponsor for seven, I'll be happy to lend you five and a half.
No. I just want to borrow five and a half to start my hedge fund. I'll find the other four and a half, but can I borrow five and a half?
But then you declare bankruptcy the next day, like the two doctors, and say you're not paying me back.
Well. Why didn't I mean? But can I borrow it?
If I had it, you could have it. What did Jackie Gleason say when he thought he had all the money?
Well, no, Dan would come in here and knock me on the head.
Oh yeah,
but the point is
more of a
you wouldn't do it because that's silly. If I didn't sign anything personally, or if I didn't if you didn't have some kind of equity interest or something, like you just wouldn't do that. But the government loves to do things without thinking about the consequences.
But I mean, I bet those guys sign.
Where's Hal when you need him? Hal.
Yeah, those guys sign the.
Help me out.
Well, that's the constant. I mean, I don't know if you were listening to John yesterday to the discussion with Hal. It's hard. Every principle that Hal adheres to, being more of an economic libertarian.
Because we're incented towards the short term, or at least the government's incented toward the short term, it's perfectly fine to sell the parking meters that for a 70-year deal that pays back in three.
Oh yeah,
whatever. But you know, that's how we operate here.
Well, that's you would think. I mean, Jana, where would this have to go? Would this have to be a state law, or it would have to be? I don't think the feds would get involved. But if a city or somebody sells an asset, you should not be able to take that into current operating expenses or income. I mean, anybody who's ever had a one-year accounting thing and seen that's not what you're supposed to do.
Can't you accelerate depreciation on real estate?
What I'm saying if I'm Mayor A, and I sell the parking garage, which has been here 150 years, actually Millennium Park's been. Well, Millennium Park was just an addition to the Grand Park garages anyway.
I think it worked out for $30,000 or so per parking spot for 70 years or something. So each parking spot only had to make, like, I don't know, $2,000 a year for them to break even, when in reality they really make like $30,000
a year.
Well,
Dr. J and I, when this first happened, me and I were doing the show together.
Or no, it wasn't.
John's a real smart guy, but you know, his background isn't in pricing stuff like mine was. I mean, he didn't get a master's in finance. So the price goes out, and both of us were, you know, reasonable buddies of Mayor Daley, knew him at the club pretty well. And I said, John, it's a horrible deal. And he said, John, you'd love this. He goes, what do you mean it's a horrible deal? You're always criticizing. I said, okay, you tell me, how many spots do they have there?
36,000.
Yeah, John says 36,000. I said, okay, what's the rate? $20. I said, how many times do you rent it a day? Probably 1.5. Okay, so here's your income. What are your expenses? I don't know. So let's say the expenses are 25%, maybe even 30%. Here's the income. What's your interest rate? What do you mean? Jen, what's the interest rate? Try 8%. All right, here's what the thing's worth. It's worth 10 times what they just sold it for.
Yep.
He goes, how do you make that calculation? I said, it's not how I make it. It's how the city guys can't make it.
Yeah, I mean, that's their job to know that.
Tell me what the stream of income is, and tell me what the interest rate is. I'll tell you what it should cost. And there's a book where you can do it.
Right.
On your, on
so
your,
the, if they if it was one. What was it? $1.15 billion or something?
Something like that.
Divided by 36,000 parking spots, came out to like 32,000 a parking spot for 70 years.
Yeah.
For 70 years, so per year that spot only has to make $455 per year.
And I'll bet
and
it makes
some in the Gold Coast probably make $200 a day.
I'll bet it makes $20 on a weekly basis. What do you figure, Jan? 20 times a week, and that's light.
Yeah, that's light.
So it's. I mean, I gotta believe you. You.
So it's covering for, it's covering the whole year in a week.
Well, Jan, what did they? I mean, when I was
at the price that they sold it for.
See now, Greg, I'm, a little more discreet than you are. When I was having this discussion with the mayor.
Well, yeah, you can't say that to the mayor.
Well, I didn't use. But it depends on how you look at it.
He's an idiot because he didn't ask somebody who actually knows how to price things.
He just saw the $1 billion number, saw it close his budget gap, and he did it.
Right.
But I didn't use this example, Jack. At the same time, was it the governor? Who the hell sold the Indiana toll road to somebody? Remember? It was right about the same time, right? The Skyway went, and then the Indiana toll road, and then the parking garage, and then the parking meters, right? Was that the sequence?
Yes, that's.
I think
can't remember who was the governor of Indiana at the time.
I don't know. I mean, Well, the mayor and I were talking about this in the steam room, and I go, he goes, "What do you think about the way government's working?" Something that was an open ended thing, and I said, "I'm not all that happy with people selling off all these assets." What do you mean? And I said, "Mayor, I'm talking about like the Indiana toll road. I didn't say the Millennium Park, trying to be nice," and I said, "What did that go for, John?" It was like $1.5 billion, $2 billion, some number. And then Mayor goes, "Well, that thing's been a loser." I go, "Mayor, you're talking about how long is the thing? 150 miles? It's got to be, is it a half a mile wide? It's a third of a mile wide, at least, by the time you look at all the access roads and everything else. So say it's a half a mile ride. You're talking about 75 square miles, right? Improved with bridges and everything else." I said, "Mayor, you couldn't get from our border past Wolf Lake, which is what, Jan, 3-4 miles? You couldn't get there for $1.5 billion if you're going to build a thing today." He goes, "Well, they don't look at it like that." I said, "But maybe they should." Jesus. I mean, and what do? They raised all the tolls. The Skyway tolls goes up every year. That's got to be the best deal ever for those guys. But a lot of it, is it? They don't know. Is there nobody in the place that can do the simple calculation? I mean, anybody?
Well, there's definitely not now.
Well, I bet there is if you look for them.
I don't think so.
But nobody wants to see it.
Now, right? They don't even have the assets to sell anymore, and that's good because they probably would be even worse.
What do you mean? They got parks. They got everything. They can put advertising in the parks. They put advertising on the buses. All kinds of stuff to sell if you got a little bit of imagination.
Oh.
Well, it shows the different bargaining positions these people have. You know, that somebody like the mayor or the governor or whatever is looking for a quick fix to close a budget shortfall, and what as grossly undervalued as an asset may be, is just what you need.
Can we buy an advertisement?
Yeah, well, but Johnny, the second we started the story by saying, let's say the number for Millennium Park was a quote fair price. Say it was $10 billion. Mayor Daley shouldn't be that money by law somewhere. By law, who's Solomon or the big guy upstairs or somebody has to say, "No, wait a minute. You're going to get a bank account. You're going to put the money in there. And if you want to buy T-bills or whatever for the next 100 years, whatever the T-bills make, you can take the income from the $10 billion into the city budget." You can't, because the next mayor gets the same stuff as you did, because you didn't own it. It's not for your 4 years. It's for everywhere. Right? I mean, you almost could have said that the state and the cities, most states and cities, it's one of the reasons why when you look at the federal disaster in terms of federal debt, how can I say this? It's not quite as bad as in total as it seems, because some of the states and cities have been refloated by that debt. You know what I'm saying?
I've got an idea.
Uh-oh.
How about we take... we do this analysis, find out one of the better the true cost of, say, some CTA stuff, and then pitch it to one of the opponents of the whoever's running against in, say, the state or some kind of city election, and then this is a bad advertisement or something like that, and just plop them on all the buses and
yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's always been kind of
advertisements. This is a terrible advertisement.
What? But yeah, but, I mean, when you talk about selling something, you can sell all kinds of stuff. I mean, what do you suppose the property by what's that little park by Northwestern and stuff there worth, Jen? The place where you can still play softball with the track. They've been kind of encroaching on that anyway. But if all of a sudden you want to put a high rise there, what's that worth?
Also, take the Obama Library. I mean, that how long is that litigated? And you know, it will still be litigated, you know, as things progress on it. But the idea of taking, you know, public land and giving it to a private enterprise is, you know, that's why you have courts. And this, you know, all the stuff we've been talking about with the bankruptcy code and everything else, when you have an aggrieved party who says, you know, this whole thing has this terrible loophole in it, and this is, you know, unfair, it runs afoul of the Constitution or whatever, and you make a case for it, and you hope you get your day in court. And, you know, but this is, you know, sometimes the legislation is revised to account for what court has found to be wrong with it, or there's enough people who are really damaged by it that nobody foresaw when the thing was being written and passed. But it's a process that never ends. You know, just looking at the case law on things like the Civil Rights Act from 1964, I mean, how many trees died to preserve all of that, you know, data and record keeping on how that law has been tweaked and thrown into the hopper and taken out of the hopper and, you know, cut to fit at a different size and put back in. It's an endless process, and it's really sloppy and expensive. But I don't know of any better way to do it, I guess. But nobody can foresee ahead of time all the things that could be wrong with something. And it may be, you know, 1,500 years later that the real pain has become, you know, too clear, and, you know, you're going to have to do something about it. But you can't craft any legislation that's immune from any possible misinterpretation or crookedness or whatever.
Jen, you're Mr. Law History, but I seem to recall when I was high school, college, somewhere, there was some sort of a law review process. There were, if you pop something out there at the federal level or maybe even at the state level, and if whatever, I don't know what size of law or whatever it was, that if it was anything to do with revenue or anything to do with other stuff, that over a period of 3-4 years, there was like a forced review to see if it was doing what it said it was doing. I'll take a shot at both sides, as I do every week. The Trump tax cut, okay, now it helped some people and helped, you know, obviously corporations a lot and so forth. It also got rid of some deductions, you know, so it wasn't all one way. But there was an estimate from the, you know, the budget office that said, oh, by the way, this is going to not cost us, or we're actually going to be accretive or something over the next 10 years. Okay, well, it would make sense on something of that size, of that magnitude. Same way with Biden's, you know, infrastructure. We're going to give, you know, what's it, four bars to every inner city place and rural place. And I don't know what he was doing, but, and all of a sudden everybody's going to be able to get computers. No, by the way, we're going to be so efficient that the tax stuff is actually going to go up. Well, I'm going to say 3 to 4 years after either one of those bills, neither one of them are working out anything near like they're supposed to work out. I think Trump's thing cost, whether it was a good or bad idea, you know, that's not the debate here. I'm going to say, at the end of the day, I think it cost, I read something a few weeks ago, how it cost double or triple whatever people thought it was going to cost, or whatever we were sold on. And same way with the infrastructure thing. It's not accretive at all. Or if it is, it's very little. So it seems to be, but now there is no review. It's like there's no review process that Major League Baseball is not interstate commerce. I mean, the Supreme Court decision. I mean, what, really? I mean, this stuff is so glaringly screwed up, Jen, and yet nobody looks at it.
Well, you know, we have a government accounting office that, you know, advises Congress on what, you know, the legislation XYZ is actually going to do to the budget, what's the true cost, and it's a supposedly nonpartisan source of input, so that, you know, the numbers that are thrown around in trying to twist arms to get votes for something, you know, some place you can look to that really says, let's cut through the BS, and here's what it's going to cost the taxpayers, here's what it's going to cost, you know, entity so-and-so, whatever. And, you know, that's something from the get-go where the legislation is being considered. But unless an aggrieved party comes forward now, I think, and challenges something, there's no reason why anything is ever going to change. So you need a class action. You need, you know, something that's got real power to get something overturned or, you know, seriously modified. But it isn't like there's any bipartisan system that does that or looks at it without there being the aggrieved party in the wings who's looking for relief.
Yeah, but if you and I decide we're going to be in the house building business, and we go to somebody and say, spec this out, and, you know, let's give us a bill of material, and let's figure out how many hours it's going to be, showing my Pullman roots here, and show where we should be 40%, 50%, 60%. Well, if we're half built, and the budget is now, by that time, we're supposed to be up to $150,000, and by the way, we're at $250,000, you would think one of us would say, wait a minute, how's this estimate working out, Joe? I mean, if it's so egregious on both the tax thing and the other thing, you would think somebody's job in the accounting office would have sort of monitor it even lightly for the first few years if it's even remotely on track. I mean, the great example of that would be when Reagan, everybody remembers Dutch, you know, the savior, put through the huge tax. What was the name of his tax decrease when he first came into office?
Well, the 81 tax cuts.
Yeah, and it was the most sweeping in this, and everybody remembers him from that. Well, somewhere in the next year, even the Republican Congress was appalled at what it did to the tax receipts and how it was impacting the deficit. When people actually cared about deficits, now we don't seem to care about them. Was it a year later or 2 years later, they put, what was it, the Tax Reform Act or something? Actually, it was the largest tax increase we've ever had, just to cover for the first one.
So misconceived, you know, it was the starve the beast mentality that all we have to do is starve the federal government, cut off the sources of, you know, tax revenue, and everything will have to, like, contract to accommodate that. Reagan never reduced spending one penny.
No.
So, I mean, what did anybody think was going to happen? Of course, you know.
Well, the weird part was they never, when they put the taxes back in, they put taxes on different people. It wasn't the same stuff.
Right.
Anyway, John, we got to go break. Our S&P Futures up 15, NASDAQ Futures up 53. You're right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Craig Pappas in the room. Do you want to introduce yourself over there, Ricardo?
Hey, yeah, I'm Ricardo Garcia. Nice to be here. Very excited to be one of the newer producers of Stocks and Jocks. Very, very excited. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. We've had a long line of interesting people that were producers.
Really?
I don't know if you can
interesting
be
is one way to put it.
Interesting is one way to
thank
put it.
Thank you for putting it that
well,
way.
Well, hopefully I'll be able to fill in the shoes, you know?
Do you think he'll ever be be able to do a sports report like Angelica?
I don't know if he'll be able to do a sports report like Angelica or have Ryan's voice, but
yeah,
he's very capable already, considering I'm sitting in the room with you and he's on the board by himself.
That's very sweet.
Angelica's response one day was, Bulls lose to Pistons. Who cares? All they do is lose. That was her sports report.
She was very right.
So Dan, are you with us?
Here.
How are you, bud? John, thank you very much, buddy. We'll have you soon again, as usual.
Yeah, take it easy. Have a good one, Dan.
All right.
Greg,
take care. Thanks.
Dan, we've got all kinds of stuff to talk about. We're going to look at some of these commodity prices. We've been talking about taxation. We've been talking about deficits. Obviously, market levels. Everybody, we're down, 3 or 4% in the NASDAQ, the correction here. So it's not heavy yet at all. Some stocks are down a little bit. We've got NVIDIA down $100, but it's bouncing back up today. Some people are somewhat worried, some aren't, but I was thinking about you last night. We were out with the attorneys and lawyer guys in honor of Judge Tooman's 86, which would have been his 86th birthday. And one of these guys are all investors, right? So the one guy's telling me he's got all his money in a lot of the high-tech stuff. And I go, okay. And he says, it's down some, but that's okay, blah, blah, blah. And he said, maybe I'd like to become a client one of these days. I said, it's kind of a little, somewhat of a different mentality between a trader and a retail person regarding stocks being down. And he says, what do you mean? I said, let's say, for instance, you had NVIDIA and the first day we talked about it, it's $9.50, and you bought it at, $5, say, or if you were really, next time we talk about it, it's $8.50. You think you're still up $8.45. I think you're down $100. He looks at me like, really? I go, a trader marks himself to market every day. Whatever it is, my first day on a trading floor, or maybe second day, some old...
Yeah, but you can close your eyes.
True.
Or go to the airport.
Well, some old guy came by, of course, he's probably nowhere near as old as I am now, walked by and said, son, if you want to be good at this business, never remember what you paid for anything, because it doesn't matter. It's what you do with it today.
It is what you do with it today, absolutely.
But how many people that trade stocks and bonds and options and stuff believe that?
Not many. I think most people don't get it. It's what happens from today going forward, right? That's what our business is about. It's today going forward. And every day you have to look at every investment that you hold and decide whether it's still a good investment or it still has upside potential or if it still makes sense for that client's portfolio. So it's every day what we own today going forward.
Dan, why is it I think I'm having trouble, although the listeners maybe are sort of believing me. When we've had this however many year bull market, really since August of 82, there's been glitches. I mean, obviously 87 crash, other places there have been glitches, but by and large, it's been a whatever how many year pretty much somewhat bull market with interest rates going from 16 to zero basically.
Right.
And now we've turned around a little bit, and it seems like nobody realized that interest is part of the equation, and it really is. I mean, I don't know that whether NVIDIA or any of these stocks are too high or too low. I would never give advice on that. All I will say is, if the 10-year rate doubles in the next 2 years, be careful, because the company better double their earnings to keep up with it. And not all of them can do that.
No, absolutely. And the other thing is, you don't have to go back to 82. Just go back to 08, 09, and go back to the period where interest rates were zero for an extended period of time. So this is a transition. What we've seen over the last few years is a transition. It's a major transition. And going from 0 to 5.5% on the Fed funds rate is a dramatic change. And it has, it definitely has an impact on the market. So that's, it hasn't been fully felt. But what's really interesting, Chief, is listening to Powell's talk the other day, his speech. He's saying, the same thing they've been saying over and over again, that it's most likely to take longer for inflation to come down, that rates aren't, that rates won't necessarily be coming down anytime soon, which is basically saying we're here with these rates for a period of time. Well, all of this money that was pumped into the system during the pandemic and prior to the pandemic, is still floating around out there. And it's interesting that this is the first time that I've heard Powell say that we're likely to see a bit of a change, where he has more confidence now that this money that's been in the system is likely to start coming out, and we're likely to see a stabilization over the next year.
Well, it's not, how's it going to come? It's not going to come out. I mean,
It's not going to necessarily come out, but it's not going to have a as dramatic an impact on say the market or on stocks. Part of what I guess he's trying to say is there's still a lot of money in the system. It's going to continue to work its way through. We aren't done with this. This isn't over yet. There's, you know, my view of this is, you know, looking at the retail sales report that came out stronger than expected, looking at the strong job report, looking at what we saw recently in the PCE number, the inflation number, looking at the consumer being strong still, very unlikely that we're going to see rates come down. And going back to your point about having, you know, being in this different environment, we are in a different environment because we have not seen interest rates, but they will start having an impact, and they already have in several sectors. I think it's smart what the Fed is deciding to do in terms of hold, but I do think that we are going to see more downside than upside, because there isn't as much money chasing. I may not totally agree with you. At some point, there won't be as much money chasing Nvidia and tech stocks. People are going to, you know, and that leveling off has already started happening since the first.
It'll be chasing something else.
They'll be chasing something else, exactly. It'll be the new AI stock, or it'll be something else. And that's, some of that's just human nature, and some of that is people looking for the best bet. I still think we're, you know, more likely to see less upside in the equity market than what we've seen over the past few years. More likely to see stability in pricing as time goes on, but we're not there yet. We're not where economists and strategists have thought we would be. We still have a lot of money in the system. We still have a lot of people chasing the market up. And with interest rates, they will have an impact. It's just a slower impact.
Dan, if we were to look at the three heads, imagine the three of us sitting there making policy. If we were sitting in a room a year ago, same way Powell is, and we go, okay, we know we got this huge price bubble we put in there, or at least we should know. We know we've got all this money coming back to the reserves as reserves every night, so it can't be absorbed yet, which I think what you're saying, it's still in the system. Although I think that's dropping. We have wages going up somewhat, not fast enough, but somewhat. I'm not sure that the three of us, even though me being the crazed monetarist that most people think I am, and maybe I am, I'm not sure we wouldn't have done exactly what the Fed has done in the last year and said, let's just keep the money supply flat. Let's not grow it. Let's see how fast wages creep up. Let's see if the population is somewhat recovering here. Let's try that for a year, 18 months, or two, just so happens to coincide after the election, and see where we are.
I would one-up you. I would say we're going to counteract whatever they're creating fiscally. So if they're printing, or if they're insisting on spending an additional $300 million or billion or whatever it was or 30%, then I would try to balance that.
Well, when you're saying you're not going to help them, go borrow it or tax it.
I would say I'm going to try to prevent you from doing that.
Well, that's what we were saying. You're going to get the money one of three ways, right, Dan? You're going to borrow it, you're going to tax it, or you're going to print it. And you say, guess what? I'm not printing it for you. Knock yourself out. Right? I mean, it sounds crude, but isn't that the truth?
If they decide to spend it, they're going to spend it, and I'm going to say, okay, now I need to erase that.
No, see, but they can't create money. Only the Fed can. If the federal government wants to borrow the two-step, and Dan, whoever designed the two-step, if there was no Fed, if you wanted to spend X number of dollars, you'd have to go out and either borrow it from your population or whoever, or you'd have to increase taxes, right, Dan? Those would be only two options. But now you can actually print it.
That's where I'm, cynical. I would figure. I think that they would figure out a way to work around with some kind of loan or some kind of federal program.
Then you'd be like the Romans. You pull more. You get less silver in the coin.
Right. Right. I would built into the expectation that they would do that, and I would say I'm going to delete it.
Well, they sort of have. Would have fed that. I'll use the term cooperative, right, Dan? Has there ever been a full fiscal policy where the Fed or the Central Bank of Britain or the Central Bank, where the Central Bank didn't help at all? I can't imagine there was a time like that, except for maybe Volcker.
Yeah, I mean, it's generally been, I think this time around it was more reactive rather than proactive. And I think the reason, let's go back to a few years ago when the Fed started the rate hikes. They were being very cautious, and they were being cautious because there was some, going back to a few years before that, when they made some decisions that actually weren't, they were off. So they're trying to be very, very on the way up. They were trying to be very, very cautious and not do too much too fast. I actually do give them kudos for the way they raised rates and the amount and also the timing, like taking their time and looking at the data. However, I think we got to a point that we didn't quite expect. Maybe it's a good case scenario that we're in right now. One thing to maybe shift gears, I think the indicator that we need to be looking at, and these numbers are coming out now, is earnings. And we're going to be watching first quarter earnings come over the next few weeks. And I think that's going to give us a lot of information. In other words, how did the higher rates that we've seen that have now been stabilized for the past several months, how are they impacting companies? So clearly Goldman's earnings came out stronger than expected. And that's a good, I think that is a very good sign. But it's a good sign for the economy, not necessarily a good sign for the financial markets.
Well, I also had a conversation with Kenny on Tuesday, and Dan, you and I have talked about this. We had this discussion over when you were in town and we had an adult beverage.
Yeah.
I have zero ability to value what Goldman Sachs, whatever line of BS they or a big bank feeds me. I don't know if I have no idea whether they're good. They have such an amazing advantage situation. They get news before anybody else. They trade ahead of everybody. I mean, I guess it's good for them if they have a good year. Is it good for you and me? I don't know. I mean, I just...
Yeah, it's not necessarily good for you and me, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is just that the fact that they've been able to have a good year with higher rates, it hasn't slowed down their business at all. So, and the way it could slow down business is just, less interest in the equity market, less interest in... But we're not seeing that. The way the company's being run is probably not a whole lot different than the way it's been run over the years. I don't think that they're necessarily adding staff. They're not only Goldman, but I think many companies. I'm thinking about Kroger. I'm thinking about some of the food, the grocery chains. They have used this market where they now have a spread, and the spread meaning the price is gone up and the costs have come down, so they're actually looking more profitable. So I think we have to be careful when we look at earnings going forward and see that, but I think it's clear to see that the inflation aspect of it, and I think the simplest example is a grocery store, prices are still high and yet costs are down, supply chain issues have been resolved, so that's pushing up profits for these companies and they're getting greedy.
Well, if you're a shareholder, that's what, I don't know if you had a chance, I always have this, interesting debate, and I'd love you to weigh in, actually, with Professor Hal Snar.
Yes.
Because Hal's a very liberal economist in the sense he's almost libertarian, and he's always looking for the market. His philosophy is amazingly similar to Milton Friedman's, amazingly. It's almost exactly word for word, but you can't really define that in a perfectly competitive world, which we I don't know if we get there, but I guess the areas that Greg deals in, corn, wheat, so they're pretty damn close to being perfectly competitive, right? Actually, your oil market is even though you know some places are vertically integrated, they have the refineries and everything else, and it can be a little crooked at times, summer blends and those kinds of things. Basically, the worldwide price of oil, I think, is pretty damn competitive. I don't think anybody can. Even the Saudis are in trouble impacting that now, right? I mean, they used to be able to. So what I'm saying is, you almost have to define the area you're talking about when you define the economics. I mean, when I saw years and years ago, these big box stores essentially pushing out all the competition and Amazon and people like that. My first fear, Dan, with my background from the 70s and 80s, is that if all of a sudden we get into an inflationary area, these guys are going to be able to suck the lifeblood out of everybody. I mean, now, Home Depot, I mean, I shopped there. It's not like I think it's a horrible store. A lot of people there are very nice. But, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that if you and I were to go in there and be, you know, a couple of assholes, if we were to get in and say, okay, the price of wood went up from here to here 3 years ago. Remember, we had the huge squeeze on lumber. And now all of a sudden, the price from the sawmill is dropped from here to here. I'm going to guess that Home Depot's prices haven't quite dropped to where they were before that started.
Absolutely, they haven't.
And there's no store down the block that says, and there's no Amazon. I'm going to say that Lowe's and Home Depot now have way more competitive monopoly power than like a food store, where there's all kinds of those. Right, or liquor store where there's all kinds of those. I mean, there's these pockets of whatever you want to call it, monopolism, cartelism, or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
That makes it really hard. And you pick up on this more than most. That, you know, well, this place is sort of competitive. They've come down. This place, maybe not so much. We're you know, Hal would like to see everything move like it's competitive, but it's sort of not. Some places it is, and some places it isn't.
But I think the indicators that we're looking at that are supporting this are consumer, personal consumption. We're looking at people continuing to buy. We're looking at people who still have money. You know, looking at generally my client base, but also my friends. I don't see anybody having problems with money, and I see a lot of people spending. I see looking at air travel, actually coming out to see you guys in June, and just looking at air travel and hotel costs. They've gone up. I mean, it's granted it's the summer, but certain parts of the country, we're still seeing prices, we're still seeing bidding wars in Boston, for example. New York real estate prices are still going up. That money for those homeowners in those areas, you're building equity still. And, you know, up until the 1st of April, we were still seeing the stock market. So the fact that people have that disposable income. And Chief, you made a comment that I really agree with, and I think that people have to think about, is that these companies or that restaurant can keep their prices high because people are still going to come. It's not until people stop going that they have to reconsider. One statistic that I came across this week that I think we know already, but it's nice to confirm it, we have had the largest jump in money supply since World War II.
Way higher.
And what I alluded to earlier is what Powell was saying, that this excess liquidity, he believes it could be drained from the economy starting later this year. That I'm not sure I agree with, but that certainly would start bringing us back to a point of price stability, and that's their goal. But maybe they are being overly optimistic about that happening because of, you know, so that's the yin and the yang. That's we have all this money in the system. We still have all these people spending. Prices can continue to remain high as long as we have all these people spending. We're not at that point where we're seeing price stability. That translates into longer term, higher interest rates for the longer term. And for those companies that are interest rate sensitive, we will start seeing at some point, you know, higher delinquencies. We're already seeing higher credit card debt. We're seeing, mortgage rates. I'm reading something yesterday saying that even though mortgage rates are higher than they've been, people are spending cash. There's a lot more cash buyers because they have it. Because the people in the Northeast that are buying their second properties elsewhere have the cash, because they've built up so much equity in their homes. So this surge that we've seen, you know, since 08, basically, in both the equity market and the real estate market has made a lot of people wealthy. And then to go on top of that, what you talked about, and I think making a really good point, you know, the money continuing to be printed, all of that is added up to inflation that is going to be sticky. That's going to be here for a while. I never doubted that. A lot of the...
Now, when you say inflation, you mean inflation or price level?
Both.
Well, they're totally separate.
I was at a grocery store yesterday, and I was still seeing higher prices on the same items. And I was just saying, how can this happen? And then I thought, it was crowded. People are buying this. And that's, as long as people are paying the price for it, we're going to continue to see that. So how does that translate into investing? So where are we? And it might sound like a broken record, but I still think T-bills are a good buy in here. I still think your strategy, Chief, is a good place to be. I think we have accumulated so much wealth. The listeners have accumulated so much wealth in the price of their property, in their 401k plans, in their IRAs. So take some of that money and lock it in. This is a time to preserve what you've earned. Municipal bonds are also still very attractive for the tax break. Corporates on the short end look attractive. I believe stocks are overvalued. I don't think this is the time to go in with both, you know, to put all your bets in the equity market, and especially in...
That's a mentality. That's a mentality. Mentality is going to be hard to change, Dan.
I agree. That's a mentality that, and you know what? I don't want to say to people or friends who are going in, you know, we told you so, but I really don't think this is the environment for that. I do think it was the environment a few years ago. I do think it was the environment for a good part of the time from 08 until recently, but I do think this is, you know, if you want to be early in getting out and you want to preserve that capital, you can get some good income with your strategy. You can get some good income with my strategy. Don't be greedy. So, you know, that would be my advice to listeners. And I do think the statistics, the way we're going with money supply, the way we're going with consumption, where we're at with inflation, it's all pointing to the end result, which for me, the action plan is to take some money off the top right now.
Well,
this is a good time.
Dan, you and I, neither one of us have the personality that if we are engineers and we see somebody using cheap bolts on a bridge and we warn somebody about it, neither one of us wants the bridge to fall down on somebody's head to prove us right. I mean, correct?
Now, absolutely, of course not.
So, I mean, even though you and I have people in the fixed income area, you more there and me in the protected area, I also have an awful lot of clients that I have, you know, 25-30% of their wealth in a protected area, and the rest of it they have legacy stocks and stuff. I don't want those to go down. I mean, these are my clients. These are my friends. I mean,
right. Exactly.
But by the same token, I know that in the housing business, Audrey and Nancy, they come out every week, and Audrey has had some several, you know, pretty good years in a row. And you look at her clients, Dan, they're very specific. I mean, well, first of all, they're specific because she has families that she sold 5 and 6 houses to, because Audrey's really good at what she does, and people like her. But if you look at it, it's this older couple bought a place, and God knows when, for $100,000. They sell it for $4,000. Then they're a cash buyer of a downsized townhouse at $350,000. Then you're going to see a couple that maybe had one kid 5 years ago, bought a house, and now the house is up. Now that they've got the equity in there, so they can take mostly a cash buy of a little bigger house, another bedroom or two, because now they got another kid coming along the way. And it's all about that whole, she has been very good, well, people find her, she doesn't find it, that being in that area. And yet if you talk to Nancy, who's in the mortgage industry, she will give you somewhat of a different view. Now, she and Audrey work very well together, but she'll say, hey, the amount of people that just can't move because they could never afford their house right now at the other interest rate, they're stuck there forever. I mean, you see people trying to add on a bedroom. You see people doing this or that. She goes, God help you, if they get divorced, then they need to get another mortgage, because now all of a sudden the mortgage is double. I mean,
right.
So the stuff we're talking about, even the, you know, what you were saying, and we actually had Aaron on this week, he subbed for Joel, and he's a younger guy, and he was talking about how the numbers are terrific and blah, blah, blah. You're right, because some restaurants are here. They're more crowded. By the way, the one across the street might have closed during COVID, but we're not really looking at that, are we? We're just,
yeah.
I mean, we're forgetting that piece. And oh, by the way, this place has been able to raise prices because there maybe are some less seats available. And maybe there's 50 families that are paying up more for dinner every week. I know I am because I take out every week. And maybe there's 50 other people that are cooking at home. But because we have less places and the prices are up appreciably, maybe they should. Maybe their revenue should be double because the prices are double, and it's up by 50% because they got 25% less people. It's really hard, Dan, as you know, to really look at these numbers and figure out who's exactly doing what and where. I mean, if Home Depot's prices are up 20% in 2 years and their revenue's up 12, I'm going to say that's pretty bad. So other people will say, hey, it's up 12. What are you talking about?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you, and that's why I think right now, today, if you want to look at an indicator that I think is going to be very important, it's going to be earnings, as these earnings come out over the next few weeks. I think we need to pay attention, and earnings estimates, you know, analyst estimates change and all that, but I think if you really dissect the earnings and you look at where the revenues are coming from and look at the cost side of different companies in different industries, I think it's going to give us some information as to where we're at and where we're going. We do talk to a lot of CEOs as part of our process, and I do like to ask those questions as, you know, what are you seeing out there now? Because remember, it was only, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, we were talking about supply chain issues, raw material costs being higher. That is changing. And we have to, you know, I think looking at how companies have managed their balance sheets in this environment is really important. So pay attention to the earnings coming forward, but also dig a little bit, or we'll do the digging for you because that's what we do, to see really what the bottom line is and why these numbers are where they are and why earnings may look very attractive. So I think that's going to be an indicator. What I will say is if for those companies that disappoint right now in this environment, we're going to see the stock prices go down. The market is sensitive to negative news on earnings.
And you want the companies, you know, you and I may disparage the fact that some companies have pricing power, but hey, those are the ones you want to own, right?
Right. And those are exactly the ones you want to own, right? You want to have the companies that have, and you know, we've talked about this, Chief, too. It goes past the stock market, right? It goes to your utilities, your local power company, your local water company, your local gas company, having the pricing power to charge more. And yes, so to a certain degree, their costs have gone up as well. But I think what's happening to the average consumer is that they're getting hit on several ends. You know, they're seeing price increases not only at the grocery store or the gas pump, but also with utilities, with medical expenses, with insurance costs. So I think, you know, as research analysts, we dig a little deeper to find out the source of this and also the reason they're able to, the companies and the organizations and the government is able to make these.
Well, I mean, there's anybody who thinks that if Powell all of a sudden starts draining money out of the system, and which I don't think he's going to do, but if he did, to attack this price level, if you think your electric bill's going down, I got a bridge for you.
I don't. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. And I do think that's that's where I don't agree with him.
Well, that's what, if he just sat in class with Milton Friedman, he said that's why you can never let inflation start. Because once it does, it goes places you don't think it's going to go and you can't get it back. SP Futures up 6. Dan, you're hanging around, right? SP Futures up 6. NASDAQ Futures up 28. We have another attorney guy in the office. Dan is a trader, went on the trading floor. The two of you guys together will be really good. This should be fun. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance.
Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, everyone. Back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We got all kinds of people here today. We got Dan on the phone. We got Greg Rubzinski in here. We got Greg teaching on the board and contributing. We got Ricardo on the board. So it's a fun day for Stacks and Jacks. SP Futures. I don't know if we're gonna have an update. We're slipping here. We're only up six. Yeah, we'll get Dan's opinion on that in a second. Nasdaq futures up 28. Dow up 76. Again, no big movers in the Dow. Caterpillar's up a buck. Apple down 65 cents, Boeing's down 96 cents. Boy, Boeing, 169, there's a company that, over in Europe, we got DAX down 16, they were up a little bit, but it's 0.1%. FTSE up 11.1%, CAC around up 18.2%, so far a snoozer over in Europe. Asia, Nikkei up 117, these guys have been down, it's 0.3%, Hang Seng up 134, 0.8%, Shanghai up 2, call that flat. Yesterday in the U.S., not so much in the Dow, down 45. S&P down 29, but the NASDAQ, another over 1%. 181 was down almost 182 points, 15,683. And we're trying to get, we got 23 of that back, so not so much. Maybe it's one-ninth of it. That's not so good so far. Bonds, they are now up 3 basis points. That's probably why we're turning down here a little bit. 4.61, we were 4.58 an hour ago. The Bund, 2.47. Japan actually down 2 basis points, 0.87. Oil down 44 cents, 82.25, so maybe the bottom end of the new range from 82 to 86. Brent down 60 cents, 86.69. Natural gas up 5 cents, up $1.76, but still very low. It's warm winter. It might stay down there for a while. Arbob down 3 cents, 2.69. The natural gas, liquefied natural gas ships are shipping to Europe. They can't even find a place to land. They're only storage for the stuff. There's a natural gas glut everywhere. Gold up $9 now, $23.97. See, if it was through 2,400 yesterday for a while, but couldn't hold it. Silver up 9 cents, $28.49. Copper up 7 cents, $4.41. So the metals keep moving. We've got the U.S. dollar. That's kind of surprising. The dollar is stronger. It's 106.6 against the euro, and it's 124.5 against the British pound. They were 107.5, 108 for the longest time, and 127. So the dollar's been stronger. Bitcoin, the last one, up 698. It was up more than that, 61,765. And they're going to try and find a way to, maybe Dan can explain how that's going to work. They're going to try and split the price. I don't know. Whoever one of you guys is doing traffic, weather, sports, let's do it.
Beautiful morning here in Chicago. It's currently 7:33 a.m. Got our 48 degrees Fahrenheit right here. With periods of rain from late morning, occasional rain this evening as well, then clearing late. We have a high of 55 degrees right here in Chicago. In Phoenix, Arizona, is 65 degrees Fahrenheit right now, partly sunny and very warm, and it's going to be partly cloudy tonight with a high of 94 degrees. On the traffic, inbound Kennedy from Monroe is going to be 32 minutes. Inbound Eden from Lane Cook is going to be 56 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 48 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 26 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 41 minutes. So pretty much as we expect Chicago traffic. On to sports, the Bulls beat the Hawks at the United Center last night at 131 to 116. White Sox lost to the Royals at home 42. And the Cubs beat the Diamondbacks in Arizona 5-2-3. That's all I got for you, Hefe.
There you go. First time. That's pretty darn good. I'd say at least you know where the expressways are. We've had people that don't.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
The Palestinians could find them.
Yeah. They we've had, Dan, we've got the convention coming on this year in the summer, and Chicago could be, I don't know if you were listening, one of my good friends, he's a little older gentleman, He got called out for the National Guard in 1968, right, for the convention. And evidently the guns were loaded. He said you didn't want to be on that detail. And they're over in Grant Park, and they got all the demonstrators, and they're pushing the demonstrators back and back. So who do you think he ends up shoving?
Huh.
His wife.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and
just
she,
like home.
And she flipped him off. would she call him some kind of, I don't know what it was, some kind of bad thing. It flips him off. He's like, he goes, this is not what I got. This is not what I signed up for. in either one of these deals, the marriage or the National Guard. Anyway, I don't think that marriage lasted too long. Just saying. But
Tom, you bring up an interesting subject. The convention of 2024 in Chicago. And in 1968, as you reminisce, I believe the police and the National Guard won that fight. But this time, my money's on the demonstrators to win.
Do you guys think, are they gonna leave the Republicans totally alone? Why? Why would you do that? All these policies.
It's in Milwaukee. That's one.
Nobody wants to go to Milwaukee?
Yeah, Chicago's a lot more fun than Milwaukee. Except they do have, Marquette's a good, great school. But and Harley Davidson's headquartered there. But there is like zero plans for demonstrations there because they're not the sitting government.
I suppose that's true.
Okay, so the Palestinians and all the other people are attacking the present administration and their policies in the Middle East. So that's why Chicago and Democrats always seem to draw demonstrators at their conventions.
Dan, do you think there's any chance of a ceasefire before then where this will all be diffused to a certain extent?
Hopefully, but I don't see that happening.
Well, I was going to pry in because, I wanted Greg to bring some of this other stuff in because all these things matter, even in some weird ancillary way, to investing. And I was going to ask you, at the end of the day, you got the inflation fight going, you've got war issues, and Lou, next week we'll go through it, maybe next Thursday, Dan, because Lou sent us a list of, poor Lou who can't talk, he sent us a list of companies that he thinks are getting a lot of these bigger contracts. And some of them are your normal, or the Lockheeds or the Honeywells, those kinds of things, which, we'll have to discuss, and, Greg knows some finance, too. I mean, what happens if Lockheed gets a $100 million thing for, to design some new drone stuff? I mean, is $100 million to Lockheed, a pimple in the butt of an elephant? I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell what's significant in these things and whether you want to go buy the company based on that. And then a lot of them, I won't say ma and pa, but they're not even public. So you can't, it's not as easy as you would think to invest in that area.
It isn't as easy to invest in that sector, but I will say, from two personal connections, or two people that I know, one who's an engineer in the defense industry, and I may have mentioned this before, he just turned 69 the other day, and he continues to get promotions and raises to stay in his position. They have more work than they know what to do with, and they're, the contracts just keep coming, and he's decided rather than retire, hey, I'm going to continue to do this, and I'm going to name my work environment, I'm going to work remotely, and I'm going to name my price and all that. So there seems to still be, in the future, I think we're going to see even stronger demand in the defense sector. Another friend who just, was about to retire and got an opportunity, very similar type of opportunity, working for Department of Defense. So they're hiring, they're expanding, they're, trying to get everything in place. And I think for a point of view of a listener or a consumer, it's good that that's happening. But in terms of how this impacts the markets, it has not had a material impact on the markets. It's a blip in the screen, even when like bad news comes out in the Middle East or in general, the market just keeps going forward, and the market's thinking, you know, AI and drones. Okay, those could potentially help, as you just alluded to. Those could help if we continue to see war overseas. So yeah, time of a good economy with the war going on, generally going to be good for the markets.
Well, but you alluded before Greg came in a lot to the interest rate stuff and to what. How are you going to value a company going forward? I mean, you can look at a Meta, you know, and again, I would not be the guy to say they're going to make $50 a year this year, $20 or $250, or $2.50 or $250. But I do know that if rates somehow get into the conversation at some point, and when Greg brings up, you know, seemingly something that has nothing to do with nothing, it has a lot to do with everything, because if all of a sudden we're going to start getting some civil unrest, it's going to cost money to deal with one way or the other, or if it's actually going to start changing people that are in office one way or the other, or if all of a sudden these wars continue and all of a sudden instead of dropping the 40% that the government is spending more than they're taking in down to 20 or 25 in the next couple of years, that's going to go to 50 or 60.
Yeah.
Well then now this 10-year rate, if we're going to start borrowing more and more money, is not going to be 4.5%. It's going to be 8 or something.
And then
8 is now going to move over to Dan's side of the table and say, wait a minute, if the 10-year rate's 8, I don't give a crap how much Meta makes. It's not worth $500. I mean, it all does sort of dovetail together, doesn't it?
And I do agree with you, Chief, and you've been very consistent in your view of seeing higher rates. And it's happening. You know, it's been happening. It's definitely been happening this quarter. So as we've seen this shift in the market sentiment, we are also seeing rates going higher. So, and that is how we're going to get out of this, if you will. That's going to be the next stage. Because remember, the yield curve is still inverted, meaning shorter rates are still much higher than longer-term rates. So a six-month T-bill, you can get 5.5%, but if you go out, you know, to the 10-year, you're getting, you know, 100 basis points less or 1% less. However, the 10 years tracking up like it did before. And I do think that's how we get out of this inversion. I think over time, we're going to see middle part of the yield curve, the 10-year, the 7-year, 10-year, 20-year, continue to track up. And we're going to see shorter rates come down. So that's going to give us that positive yield curve. And we're just at the beginning of that happening right now.
Well, when I ask the boat of you guys, we from the South Side, if you had to pick a rate, if I were to tell you, well, all certainty, I just came back from the future. Can you come back from the future? That was a movie.
Yeah.
Well, it was back to the future, not back from, whatever. If I were to tell you exactly that Meta is trading roughly $500, it's up $343 this morning, it's $497.60, let's call it $500. If I were to tell you exactly that for the next 10 years, Meta is going to make $50 a share, which is more than they're making now, but say, I love the place, let's say Meta is making $50 a share. What rate, when you've got your short term at 5.5, which doesn't look like it's going higher, it maybe even looks like it might going to go lower in the next year or two, maybe. Now, your 10-year rate is 4.6, 2 weeks ago it was 4.2, so it's creeping to the upside. I'm going to ask both of you guys, kind of different walks of life, if I was going to value Meta with this absolute certainty of $50 a year, what rate would I use to discount that?
I think that's hard to pick because I don't think Meta is going to stagnate.
Well, I'm saying if it does, well, what rate would I pick? Would I pick the long-term rate at 4.6 and say the other stuff's coming down? Would I pick a short-term rate? Normally, you wouldn't value a company on a six-month rate. Or would I say, I think the 10-year is going to go to 6, I'm going to use 6 or 8 or something? I have no idea. That's why I'm asking you guys.
We do what we call scenario analysis. So we would try a couple of different rates and see what the you know results are. So I would probably say, you know, you do a best case scenario and a worst case scenario, and then you look at some of the numbers in between. I would probably say higher, though. I would tend to agree with you. So forward looking, you know, if we're making our assumptions on the best discount rate, I would probably go, you know, if the 10-year's at 4.5, I probably wouldn't use 6%.
I would probably bifurcate and use several different functionalities of rates and then see a range of what could be.
Yeah.
Because you can't... it's such a moving part. It's hard to definitively decide one. I mean, you have a major, major event happening of a change in the White House, and possibly a transition or a change in who's running Congress this fall, which is in this environment, this is probably one of our most significant elections ever in our lifetime. And then you have this civil unrest. I mean, let's say transportation disruption is significant in pricing of products, because these containers are now 4x, 5x of what they were because of pirates, ships having to have more insurance, and also other ships saying, you know, I'm not even going to go through that area. I'm just going to go around Africa. But that, like, makes the trip a long haul. It's longer than a three-hour cruise. It's a long haul just to move containers.
Which means you don't have enough ships, because they're all going to be... So, I mean, it's all really kind of... Just to let everybody know, if you decide that your rate is 4.5%, and you're gonna give Meta $50 a year for everybody's life, it's worth $1,100. If you use 9%, it's worth half that. So it makes a huge difference, right? I mean, you guys know that.
You have to do, as Greg's saying, you have to do what we call scenario analysis. You have to look at multiple rate scenarios, and then as an investor, that's what we do. And then you make your determination, and you give a certain amount of. You have a certain amount of conviction for a particular rate. We're going to get to a positive yield curve. It's either going to happen from rates going down in the short end, as I mentioned earlier, or rates going up in the middle part of the curve, the 7-year, 10-year, 20-year. I think it's going to be a combination of both. I do agree with you, Chief. We're going to see higher rates. I don't think it's going to be a dramatic shift higher, but I do think we'll see higher rates. Based on the fact that we see higher inflation, based on the fact that our economy is stronger than was anticipated. So that is the trend we're in right now. And I think you do have to look at different, you know, how different rates are going to impact the future of these companies. Going back to a comment that I've made, and I don't want to kick a dead horse, but I want to make sure people pay attention to earnings that are coming out. Not so much whether the companies are beating analyst expectations, but looking at the absolute level of earnings, looking at what they've done on the top line, what they've done on the bottom line, and what has happened to costs. Because the trend with costs is very, very important here. And I think we have to pay really careful attention, again, as Greg was alluding to, like transportation costs that could come up in the near term, and could change, if you will. There could be another impact there. In the short run, I can say that we have seen prices have been sticky. That will definitely put an impact on, I mean, rates will have an impact going forward. Higher rates are probably the only thing that can give us price stability at this point.
I want to be one of these expectators. The guys beating expectations. I want to be one of the expectators.
and why is that?
So I can say. I can be one. What did Mayor Daley said? He said, the allegations have been, he goes, let me see these alligators.
Yeah. I understand that. I tend to want to look at the absolute numbers, and I want to look at the trend over time, and which way are we moving? Are our revenues, our top line increasing? Where is that coming from? I want to look at costs. Are costs coming down? And where are those? Is it from better management? Is it from lower raw material prices, lower transportation costs? You want to know where that's coming from, and that's when you're making decisions on where to invest. Those are the things you need to be looking at. Those are the things we look at. And then, of course, we're looking at valuation of the company, too. I mean, is it trading above where it should be? We tend to avoid momentum, and there's a lot of momentum at this stage of any cycle. And the momentum is the name that keeps pushing up the NVIDIAs. It's talk of AI that keeps pushing up the stocks that even mention AI or have anything to do with AI. So the momentum is what, you know, as cautious investors, as investors who look at growth, but more importantly at preserving capital, we have to really pay attention to.
When once in a while, Dan, I know I'm very guilty of this because I always I don't know where the hell I learned this. I like to bring things down to the simple bottom line. I mean, the very bottom line, because you and I and Greg and I talk about this a lot. We sometimes have an adult beverage, and it's you look at the federal rates, and you've got this big hole in the deficit, and you've got Illinois and Chicago, which Greg knows more about than me because he helped guys run for alderman and so forth. They seem to have gotten a little bit of a reprieve with a lot of federal money in, like you're talking about, the munis. And so Chicago's credit rating is actually higher in the state. So is the state, isn't it, Greg, than it was 4 years ago? I think it's a lot higher, right?
The state is much higher, but Chicago's beginning to slip again.
Okay. But when you look at this and we've got, all right, the government has to go out and borrow money every month or every week, really. And you were saying, Dan, that the Fed is at least somewhat on the sidelines. The money supply has been damn near even for a year. Down, it's up a hair, but it's, let's say it's even. So the Fed has been somewhat on the sidelines. They're not pouring money into the system right now, and you and I think agree that there's still some left over from what they did before, which is complicating the whole works. But let's say they're neutral. Well, if the Fed, all of a sudden we've got, you know, either in unrest here, we've got these wars that don't, no ceasefire, and we got to start spending more money there. And oh, by the way, everybody's paying an extra 4 days or 6 days and $200,000 in fuel to get around the Cape and can't use the Suez Canal like Greg's talking about. Well, that starts to happen, and the Fed now has to go out and borrow even more. My question is, who the hell are they going to borrow it from? And how, I mean, China's not capable or willing to give us a hell of a lot more. I mean, are we, if we can start borrowing from our own people, I think that I've seen these rates go from, you know, 4 to like 15 in a year. Well, not so much that, but I mean, I saw that during the 80s and late 70s. I'm not predicting it. I'm saying anybody says it can't go up that fast, yeah, it can. I mean, and then all of a sudden, how does that affect a stock that you happen to like? Not the company. The company's probably going to be doing fine. How is that going to affect it? All this stuff, like you guys have both alluded to, you've got to do almost look forward and say, okay, let's take these set of circumstances, and then, no, what about all these? I think they're really hard to figure what they are right now.
I think that you know, going back to who you think is going to invest or support, so globally, you know, we're doing better here in the States, but globally, the economy's doing better. Japan's doing better. Europe's doing better. You know, sort of not talking about China right now at the moment. The rest of the world is sort of following the U.S. as it generally does. You know, and I think people need to accept that that's the way things happen. These countries don't act as independently as some people want to believe. So they still view us here in the States as the safety, the flight to quality. We still have high rates. We still offer a lot more in terms of investments, whether it be on the equity side or even on the fixed side. So there's still a lot of foreign investment coming in because we have high rates, because we offer probably the closest to a risk-free rate, because we don't have, although we believe as citizens of the U.S. that we have a lot of political unrest here, we don't relative to a lot of other countries, and because we still are the leader in the world in the financial markets. So money will continue to flow into the States from foreign investors. It'll continue to flow into treasuries. We'll continue to have that support as the economies around the world continue to improve. So I have a lot of confidence on that side.
I don't disagree, but at what level are we talking about? I'm going to look at the current monthly Treasury statement as soon as I get this thing here. See PDF file. We'll do that. We're borrowing. Let me find the number, but we're borrowing what this year? It's pushing 40%. I'll just get the. This thing takes a second to load because it's huge. But if we all of a sudden have to borrow 20% more, I don't think any of the three of us would say we're not going to have to pay a little more for that, meaning interest.
Yeah, well,
now the question is, if all of a sudden we there's, you know, we have to knock out 80 more drones next week and the week after, and all of a sudden we've got to buy God knows how many $1 million missiles and, you know, our own drones and everything else and more airplanes, and all of a sudden we're borrowing twice as much. I mean, what's that number? This year we're, our deficit in from October to March is $1.064 trillion, which, let's assume for a second, we're not printing the money for. I don't like the tax is obviously not covering. I mean, here's how bad we are. Receipts are $2,188,000,000. Expenditures are $3,252,000,000. So we're, damn it, we're over a third, right? We're almost 40% in the hole. All of a sudden, so somehow, if you take away the, you know, whatever the fiscal stuff, and somehow we've had to borrow $1,000,000,008,000,000 in how many months? October, November, December, 6 months of the fiscal year. Well, if the next 6 months are $2 trillion, I can't believe these rates are going to be here. I mean, unless China all of a sudden has a massive year and says, we'll give you the dough at today's rate, I don't see that happening to you.
No, I agree with you. From that point of view, from that perspective, I definitely agree, and that's why we're going to see higher rates. I think that's you know, I absolutely agree with you. I want to make one point, not totally unrelated, but I do want the listeners to know something that we've done a little bit more analysis on. And municipal bonds are very attractive right now for a lot of reasons. You've got higher rates. We can see a lot of AA rated bonds that are yielding 5% or more.
Well, that's good.
And then you've got to look at the after-tax yield, and that's like closer to 7%. So you can get a nice short-term bond, one-year bond with no interest rate risk for a money good municipality, 7% after-tax return. And that is very attractive. Part of what you pay for with the municipal bond is liquidity, because they don't trade they're not as liquid as, say, a treasury or a big stock, you know, an NVIDIA. But we do our homework on these names, and this is something that we do very well and that I've been doing for close to 40 years now, and I think this is a very good time to invest in tax-exempt municipal bonds. I think sometimes what happens you're in Chicago, where there's been a lot of issues with the city, as Greg alluded to recently, and the state's improving, but there's a lot of other investments around the country, and we even have triple tax exempt bonds that you can buy in places like the Virgin Islands, single A rated airport bonds that are, you know, after tax you're getting 7.5%. So this is an area of opportunity as the markets are changing. Default rates on municipal bonds are historically extremely low relative to corporates. It's a good period if you have a taxable account.
Yeah, and if you were to rattle some off there, because I'm going to say I don't think Chicago is double A, but if you were to rattle off five places that are double A, who are we talking? Plus, when you buy them, if you find one of these, now Dan is way better at this than we are, because that's what he does all day. If you're to find a muni that's priced like that for 18 months or 2 years or 3 years,
yep,
you're buying it with the intention of holding it, right? You're not going to try and scalp, I mean, unless it really went up.
At this point, you would be buying it to hold it, yep, so the liquidity becomes less of an issue. And the reason you were doing that at this point, Chief, is because we don't believe rates are going higher.
Okay.
So we're doing it, and even if rates were to go higher and you're on the short end, that's not going to impact the price of your bond. As long as you can lock in a really good rate, so that 7% after tax on a 1.5 year AA rated bond, and where we're finding them is really all around the country. So even though, you know, the city of Chicago may have issues, there are going to be municipalities, there are going to be projects, there are going to be other bonds issued through the tax exempt market, even in Illinois. But, you know, you go to some other states that maybe have, you know, it could be just Wisconsin to your north that has some bonds. It could be Connecticut. It could be,
well, but who would be, just for an example, who'd be double A, like Des Moines or Columbus or somebody like that? I mean,
Yeah, absolutely. You could get, if you're looking just at the municipality. But remember, a lot of bonds are issued, say, airport revenue bonds, projects, whether they be housing projects, and we know that we've seen a lot of development going on right now. A lot of these bonds have what are called sinking funds, where they have to set aside a certain amount of money each year, and that actually lowers your credit risk when they have that. We're getting nice fat yields on a lot of bonds. They're even in like California. For my California clients, we have some Sacramento bonds that are yielding AA that are
really
paying much higher than that. They're paying like 8.5%.
Dan, we got to dash here. I have one quick question, and like Greg, you might be able to answer it. Even during the COVID or even 9/11, places like O'Hare and Denver Airport, they never came close, even with losing all the landing fees. They never came close to not making an interest payment, did they?
Yes, is what I would say. Yes, they were fine.
I'm saying they're, so even in the crises we've had, those guys have been fine.
Absolutely.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, next week, let's dig through some of those ones that Lou sent us. And if you want to talk about a few different municipalities, because I think a lot of people don't even understand these things are out there. I mean, it's not my... that's why I'm fascinated when you come up with these things. Greg, thank you very much.
Okay.
Hey, you guys over there, Ricardo and Greg, good job. I think you got your man's almost ready here, Greg. S&P futures up 650. We're down from where we were. NASDAQ down 16. We'll see if we hang in there today. Hope we do. One day up would be kind of nice. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Have a good day.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.